from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and from Eskenazi Health. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
I'm Sharon Gamble. Welcome to The Art of the Matter. On today's show, we'll get our holiday shopping started with the Yelp Holiday Bazaar, discover Eli Lilly at the start of his amazing career, and learn how to collect oral histories with StoryCorps' David Isay. We'll also sample Carrie Newcomer's small studio session. And don't forget, we'll have that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do?
All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Welcome back to The Art of the Matter from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. This week, there was a time when Eli Lilly was just a young man with a dream, and that giant downtown corporate campus wasn't even a twinkle in his eye. Speaking of influential places, the Indianapolis Symphonic Choir is still reveling in memories of its return to Carnegie Hall. First, though, I'm sure you've already been somewhere where Christmas music was being played. I know it seems early, but your calendar's going to fill up fast, so we wanted to tell you about one of Yelp Indy's most popular events coming up early next month. It's the Yelp Holiday Bazaar. It's a one-night eat-drink-shop-till-you-drop opportunity featuring hundreds of Indiana vendors. It's free to attend, but this year, for the first time, you have to make a reservation to attend. WFYI's Jill Dittmeyer talked with Yelp Indy marketing manager Brittany Smith and several vendors to find out what to expect and how to make that important reservation.
It's November, but we're talking about December, and the indie Yelp diva herself, Brittany Smith, here to tell us once again about the Yelp Bazaar. Now, remind our listeners the history of this event, Brittany. How did this come to be?
Yeah, this is actually our fifth year. It's hard to believe it. And each year it's growing by the thousands in attendees. And it started originally at City Market downtown. And we quickly outgrew that space. From there, we went to Old City Hall, which was a vacant building that I remember being in the building. They handed me the keys. We swept it up and we turned it into a one-night shopping party. And now we're in our third year at Central Library, which is really neat because it's like taking the library and turning it into a mall for one night.
And another thing that's new this year is people need to RSVP. This is a big change.
Yes.
So we want to make sure that's why we're talking about this now.
Yes, we're definitely working on a learning curve. The main reason for that is we're able to communicate with the attendees ahead of time, let them know where to park, let them know where vendors are going to be before you show up. It's really hard for us to communicate all of that information. So now we can actually tap into the people that are coming, share with them about the business owners, and they'll know what's going on when they get there.
And where do they RSVP?
Yes, yelp.com/events. It's on the Indianapolis page. You can also find it on the app, and it literally takes like 2 seconds.
And we have a couple of our vendors here today. Laura Carr from KG Acres Farm. Hello.
Hello.
How did you become a vendor for the bazaar this year?
I believe Brittany found me through the Indy Winter Farmers Market, where I was selling crafts made from feathers from the heritage poultry we raise on our farm.
Have you been to the Holiday Bazaar before?
Every year.
And so how does it feel to actually be a vendor this year?
It's great. It's a great place to meet a lot of people I don't normally encounter in my business because I usually do farmers markets and get to see so many other great vendors, too. It's really a fun event, and I love the local focus.
And Steve Hall, you're with Tinker Coffee. Have you been to the bazaar before a vendor?
Yeah, this will be our second year at the bazaar.
And how was it last year?
Last year was great. It's a steady flow of traffic the entire night, and everybody's really enthusiastic. It's fun to, for us at least, since you don't have a cafe, it's fun to give samples to people, let them try the coffee before they actually buy it. So we're looking forward to that again.
And Tia Agnew with New Day Meadery, New Day Craft. I still want to call you the meadery. You do the meadery. You do the cider. You do many, many things.
We do.
You guys have probably been involved every year that we've had the bazaar.
I'm thinking, yes, it's been every year. I remember all those locations.
And the thing about the bazaar, in case somebody hasn't been, it's all about sampling and learning more about local vendors. Because obviously, Brittany, Indie Yelp is all about that. It's about promoting local. And
yes.
This is a real hands-on, interactive evening.
Yeah, it's actually a really tough process. It's a curated list of businesses, so they have to apply. It's actually free to be a part of the event, and it's free for attendees as well. But we really have to focus on keeping those businesses here in Indiana. The products are made in Indiana, and that's what I think makes it really special.
And Tia, New Day Craft, you guys have been around for over 10 years now.
We have,
so you know how important an event like this is
for a
business.
Absolutely. You know, like Laura, we actually started, we had a tasting room, but we started with farmers markets. That's how we used to get the word out years ago when we were way up in the small town of Elwood. But yeah, getting in front of your customer, it's huge. Not just you know, the physical sampling of the product, but having that FaceTime, shaking hands, and getting to know, you know, who loves your product, you know, as much if not more than you do.
And Steve, from last year, did you have people that came to visit you after they'd been to the bazaar that maybe didn't know about you before?
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and we made friends with the vendors around us. You know, that we've kind of curated those relationships quite a bit. So yeah, it's fun meeting different vendors and really getting to know everybody that's kind of, you know, struggling with the same things you are.
And Laura, I'm guessing it's going to be like a farmer's market times 1,000 when you pack the car to go to set up that day. What are you running through your mind?
A little bit of panic always, but you know, after 4 years, I've kind of got the good rhythm down and know what to bring and how much, and it's still always a surprise.
And I think that's the other thing too, Brittany, is after 5 years, you know what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, we've learned a lot. Every year it's a learning transition. Like, okay, we don't want to pack too many people into this wing, so we got to make sure we're moving vendors and floor plans. Because this is, I think, unlike a lot of other shopping events, this is one of dozens of events we have throughout the year. So we're trying to keep all these balls in motion at the same time, and keep the shoppers happy and the vendors happy.
It's also a wonderful opportunity for people to experience the library. And this is also an important part of your partnership this year with the Holiday Bazaar.
Yes, I'm a very proud library card holder, and you'll always find me with a bunch of books and DVDs from there, and I know you are too, Jill.
I am.
And one of our goals this year is to get 200 people to sign up for their library card for the first time at the event, because so many people that attend the bazaar, one of the big focuses is to see the library for the first time. It amazes me how many people walk in and they're like, I had no idea this is what this looked like. So it's an untapped resource.
And it's fairly interesting, too. I'm sure all of you spent time maybe as children in a library. And from your time as what a library was then as it is now, did you ever think that you'd be sampling your wares in a library?
It makes me want to be six again and go to the children's area because it's really cool.
But it kind of does give it – it really is the perfect venue, I think, especially at this point, too.
Oh, it's a great venue. I love it. It's one of our favorite events. I just was meeting with my events manager, Michelle, and we were both talking about how much fun it is.
And it's not just food and drink, although, Brittany, let's face it, Indie Yelp is really focused on that. And we love that because we do your Hoosier Jubilee every month that we celebrate here on the radio, too. But there are other businesses that have been around and that are new and that are getting national acclaim and following, too, that are right here in Indianapolis that we'll get to know about there.
Yeah, actually only 30 to 50 of the businesses are food related out of 150. So that kind of shows you how much it's diversified over the years. A great example of that, Manayunk Calligraphy is one of our businesses. She does beautiful stationery, and she actually recently was picked up by Anthropologie and Target. So her items are going to be carried there now. So there's a lot of businesses like that that are being picked up by big brands, and you really get to meet the makers and purchase it directly from the person who created it.
And Tia, New Day, you have been recognized. This coming up will be your second year here by the Yelp Group overall nationally.
Yeah.
Tell us about why you're going back out to San Francisco again.
Oh, man, yeah. It's an event called Coast to Coast. It's basically something just for business owners like myself. It's an amazing two-day conference. Last year was their inaugural year, and I was one of 100 basically top-rated businesses through Yelp in the nation, and I've been asked to come back as an advisor. So I'll be like doing seminars and kind of sharing my advice and, you know, helping and, you know, kind of bringing in the next 100, this year's 100 fellow business owners to tell them kind of, you know, what Yelp's all about. But we already all know what Yelp's all about, but how we can kind of take it to the next level and make our businesses even better.
It's a wonderful recognition for the city of Indianapolis, too.
It's a true honor, I have to say. I was pretty blown away when I got asked to come back again. I'm like, really? You guys really like
me?
They
love you.
Thanks.
Well, people need to make sure that they RSVP if you don't have a library card. Shame on you. You're going to get one that night, too.
I'll hunt you down.
And we wish all of you many, many fun sampling and happy sales that night and in the years to come as well. And Brittany, I know we'll be talking with you again soon for more Hoosier Jubilee fun from Indy Yelp. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, Jill.
Thanks, Jill.
The Yelp Indy Holiday Bazaar takes place on Thursday, December 8th at Central Library in downtown Indianapolis. Jill will also be featuring the event as part of WFYI's Facebook Live segment that afternoon at 5:30 on the WFYI Facebook page. Last month, the Indianapolis Symphonic Choir kicked off its 80th anniversary season with a return to Carnegie Hall, the choir's first performance in that storied venue in nearly 40 years. Eric Stark conducted the New York City debut of the Oratorio Zabur by composer Mohammed Farouz, a piece commissioned and premiered by the ensemble in 2015. They were joined by the Indianapolis Children's Choir and New York-based orchestra Mimesis Ensemble. I invited Artistic Director Eric Stark and Assistant Artistic Director Michael Davis in to hear how the concert went and to give us a sneak peek at their holiday concerts. All right. Favorite moment from the Carnegie Hall concert? Eric?
There was a near the end of the piece, after we've been singing at triple forte and the whole orchestra is going, there's a wonderful calm that arrives when we sing unison a cappella for a few moments, in a tribute to Britain, actually, according to Mohammed Farouz, the composer.
Huh.
And because of the wonderful acoustics of that hall, we were able to do that moment at a quieter dynamic than we've ever experienced before.
Wow.
And it just was a spine-tingling, goosebump kind of experience for all of us.
Wow.
I don't know how it felt where you were singing, Dr. Davis, but
it was great.
It was pretty remarkable. And then at the end of the piece,
had you sussed that out in your sound check /rehearsal?
We had like 15 minutes on stage for a rehearsal that morning.
So you had to really
and
choose
so we,
your moments.
We did
definitely.
All the loud stuff and we did all the quiet stuff. And when we got to the quiet stuff, we realized we can really go someplace new with this. And so we did. But then as the piece closes, which it finishes very quietly, I could just sense that the audience was really in the moment. And so, you know, I just took my time with my hands, and it was quiet for a good long while before the applause started. And that, I'll never forget.
That's the most rewarding.
Yeah.
That has to be so rewarding. Yeah. And where were you sitting?
Well, my favorite moment from where I was sitting in the warm-ups was when I was in the hall checking for balance.
Yeah.
And, it's the Stradivarius of halls, and so the floors are wooden. And so the very opening when we were checking for the loud balances, everyone comes crashing in. The chorus is screaming from their bomb shelter, and everybody in the orchestra is playing at full tilt. And I could feel the floor shaking and moving, you know, and reacting as part of the reaction. And so that was, to Eric's point, that was when I was like, well, we're going to really be able to expand this piece and this space and really let it take its wings and soar across, and it sure did. Hmm. So just the louds were just so warm, but just so powerful. But then the profound silences were amazing.
So no pressure or anything, but now you have all these singers who had this experience with you, and they're like, can we, how do we recreate that now that we're, how do you keep them down on the farm once
now,
they've heard?
Yeah.
Now,
well, how about Festival of Carols?
Indeed, and talking about acoustical differences, you're going from the Scottish Rite to the Palladium. Four performances total?
Five total.
Five?
One downtown at the Scottish Rite and four up north at the Palladium this year.
Repertoire?
A wonderful mix of holiday favorites and some new things. Joy to the World, Bring a Torch, Jeanette Isabella. Mm. We're thrilled to have our special guest, Sylvia McNair, joining us again for the performances at the Palladium. And she's introduced us to a piece that we did with her last year and we'll do again this year that really captures the essence of the season. It's called My Grown-Up Christmas List, and it's about a wish for love and peace and understanding among all peoples. And, of course, she sings it so beautifully, as you can imagine.
What nationality is the composer?
U.S., I believe.
I think that's right.
And I can't even recall the name right now. I'm sorry.
I don't know. That's okay. And is it does it have kind of a traditional cadence? Would I recognize it as a Christmas piece, even without the words?
Was it Amy Grant that sang that?
I think you're right.
Oh.
I think that's an Amy Grant song. Yeah. She may have written it.
It was new to me, but it's orchestrated beautifully, very sensitively, and the choir accompanies as well. And so it's not ostensibly a sacred choral piece,
sure.
a sacred Christmas sure. piece, but it gets you right there. It gets you in the heart. And Sylvia sets it up so beautifully that when we performed it last year, and I know she'll do it again this year, that everyone in the audience is like, oh, yes, we need this message. We need to remember this and carry this out from this space today.
And maybe especially after the political season that's drawing to a close.
Oh, we'll be past it. Thank heavens. That in itself is reason to celebrate.
The message of Sapur is I think of that as well.
You know, I'm just so proud to be a chorus in a community that values the coming together of disparate voices and people of different backgrounds. And we see that, of course, in the Zabur, but especially also in the holiday performances that we do. We try to create a program that appeals to as wide a variety of folks as possible, regardless of affiliations or where you go on Saturday or Sunday for services, because there is something very special about our community here. And as much as I think our audience enjoy coming to hear the Symphonic Choir Festival carols, we enjoy presenting it for the audience because we
That's
get
right.
that back. On the stage, we feel that. It's quite remarkable and special.
Yeah, truly there is something for everyone, as they say, kids from 1 to 92, mm-hmm. or 2 to 92, or 3 to 92. There's something for everybody between Santa Claus, and sometimes we've had a few other characters
That's
running
right.
around.
The Indianapolis Symphonic Choir's Artistic Director Eric Stark and Assistant Artistic Director Michael Davis. For more stories, check their blog at indiechoir.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. Later this hour, turn a Thanksgiving family reunion into an impromptu oral history session with tips from StoryCorps' David Isay. But first, it's time for Eat, Drink, Indie. This week, Jolene Ketzenberger talks with Tia Agnew of New Day Craft about the release of Imperial Breakfast Magpie, their mead that's achieved a cult-like status and that people line up for on Black Friday.
Okay, Tia, so it's that time of year again, so I have to ask about Imperial Breakfast Magpie.
Yes, it's coming upon that time of year. The day after Thanksgiving, I believe it's November 25th this year.
All right, so forget about Black Friday shopping.
Yeah, I mean, whatever. You don't need to be shopping. Come hang out and drink with us. I mean, really, doesn't that sound like far more of a good time? But yeah, Imperial Breakfast Magpie is black raspberry and espresso mead. Everyone has heard of Breakfast Magpie. Well, this is the Imperial version of it, where it's not only higher ABV, but it's also been bourbon barrel aged.
Now, this only comes out once a year, right?
It does. It comes out once a year on the day after Thanksgiving. We do a limit one case release per customer, and we have it on tap to enjoy by the glass in house. No growler fills.
Tell me about how Imperial Breakfast Magpie came about and exactly what it is for people who might not be familiar with this. This is very special local product.
Yeah, it sure is. The whole evolution of the Magpie line, I guess I can talk about that.
Right.
Many years ago, those customers who know about us know we've been around. We're actually going on 11 years.
Oh,
we've
my
been
goodness.
In business. We began just making mead moons and moons ago. We made a semi-sweet black raspberry that everybody really enjoyed. Well, it was more of a wine style. And when we moved to Fountain Square 6 years ago, we finally had kind of the breathing space and the ability to start experimenting with carbonated styles. Thought originally that was going to be a line extension, like, oh, we'd always do the still styles. Yeah, well, a few years after that, we stopped the still lines, and we wanted to bring some of those flavor profiles over into the carbonated line.
From the wines that you used to do.
Yeah, exactly. Right. From those still meads that we used to make. Mm-hmm. And so we made one called the Magpie, which was the black raspberry, in a carbonated form, lower ABV, all that stuff. And so we were, we played with that. People enjoyed it. But we looked at what else creatively we could do with our flavors. And we kind of, Brett and I were sitting around going, so I think espresso and black raspberry sounds really good together. Let's give it a shot. So for fun, we threw that in there. And then Breakfast Magpie was born and people went crazy over it.
Now, why was that? What did they seize upon?
Well, I mean, as everybody says, I've never tasted anything like this before in my entire life, which I'm like, that's a lot to say in the beer world.
Right.
Because, we're all doing crazy stuff. So we did the Breakfast Magpie. It was, got tons of love and still does.
Now, when did that come out?
That comes out usually every first or second weekend of December. So we'll have the regular, quote unquote, Breakfast Magpie out in this December. And that'll be around for a few months. But with the Imperial, we wanted to, again, take it up a notch. So, I'm like, well, bourbon. I really like bourbon. And let's put it in some bourbon barrels and see what happens. And we did that. And we thought, it'll be this fun little one-off one time thing we do, and of course it went crazy, and we sold it out literally in 3 hours the first day.
The first year.
What
was the first year?
I want to say, was it 3 years ago? 2 years ago?
I'm guessing 3 years ago.
I think it was 3 years ago. Yeah. Well, if you include this year, yeah. So we originally did it, and we had gone. So last year, it lasted. A few more hours last year, because we released quite a bit more. But again, usually it'll stick around in house for just glass consumption, usually just over the weekend.
So you'll be out of a weekend?
Oh, yeah. The bottles will be gone that day. But yeah, we have a few kegs out. So
now tell me what it's like on that day.
As of last year, people started lining up at 7 a.m. We open at noon.
You open at noon? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. It's very heartwarming, and I'm really excited about it.
The day after Thanksgiving in Fountain Square,
right? Absolutely. Yeah, Fountain Square, right at the corner of Prospect and Shelby, New Day Craft. Come see us and hang out.
Jolene Ketzenberger with Tia Agnew of New Day Craft. Hear Jolene's Eat, Drink, Indies Saturday mornings at 11 on WFYI HD2, The Point. If you're a regular WFYI Public Radio listener, StoryCorps has probably brought you to tears or made you like to work at least once. But StoryCorps is more than a segment on Morning Edition every Friday. It's a movement built on the idea that listening is an act of love. WFYI's Michelle Johnson talked with StoryCorps founder David Isay about the power of a few good questions and why you should take time this season to ask them.
When StoryCorps launched its Great Thanksgiving Listen and its free mobile app last year, it collected 50,000 interviews in one night, as many as they'd recorded in 10 years of traveling the country with mobile recording studios. Most of the Thanksgiving interviews were high school students talking with their elders, asking questions like, how do you want to be remembered? Isay says that in the aftermath of such a rancorous presidential election, this year's Listen has a different aim— asking advice on how the country can come together.
StoryCorps in so many ways is about passing wisdom between generations. And I don't think there's anybody who would disagree that we live in a very deeply divided, fractured country. And the primary question is asking elders for advice on how to heal that divide and their wisdom about what's going on in the country, talking about their feelings about the country, talking about their hopes going forward, their fears going forward, and just connecting. I mean, the other standard great StoryCorps, Great Thanksgiving Listen questions will be asked as well, I'm sure. Questions like, what are the most important lessons you've learned in life? How do you want to be remembered? I mean, this is in many ways, StoryCorps is about our character, the character of who we are and the character of this country. And that's what comes out in these interviews.
Hi, my name is Kara Masteller, and I interviewed my grandfather in my 1994 Buick.
How did you know that grandma was the one?
Well, she was a good looker. We fit together. We were a good pair.
My grandma, everyone referred to her as like a spicy meatball. She swore a lot, but she looked so innocent that no one ever expected her to say the things that she said.
Were you nervous to propose to her?
No. We had something to say, we said it. Like you.
That was one of the recordings that happened during the Great Thanksgiving last year. It gives you a sense of how to do these interviews and what happens in these interviews with the app. You know, StoryCorps is the opposite of reality TV. Nobody comes to get rich. Nobody comes to get famous. It's just this act of generosity and love. That's an example of it, and there are tens of thousands of other examples like it.
What is the one thing that you might say to someone who is listening to us who might be on the fence about sitting down and having a conversation using the app?
I'd say, you know, just do it. I mean, when you do these StoryCorps interviews, first thing is you're going to find out something about the people, the person you're interviewing, no matter how close you are to them, that you never found out that you didn't know before, and you're not going to regret it. I mean, this is an interview that will live on for generations at the Library of Congress. Your great, 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 great grandkids will get to hear this someday. These are not conversations about politics. These are conversations about dreams and hopes and not getting into issues. And, you know that the microphone gives you the license to have, you know, very intimate conversations, to talk about things you don't normally get to talk about. And that's a little bit scary, but anything good is a little bit scary. And I hope that people will take the risk and make the jump and, become part of this national effort to start to listen to each other so that we can together imagine and create a stronger and better America that you know, listens better to each other and treats all of the people in this country with dignity and respect, which I think is something that all of us want.
Let's listen to just a bit of one of these stories, the many thousands of stories that have been collected. This is the story of Albert and Aiden Sykes, a fourth grader, and his father, who sat down to talk about their relationship.
So, Dad, what are your dreams for me?
My dream is for you to live out your dreams. It's an old proverb that talks about when children are born, children come out with their fists closed because that's where they keep all their gifts. And as you grow, your hands learn to unfold because you're learning to release your gifts to the world. And so for the rest of your life, I want to see you live with your hands unfolded.
You know, there's so much beauty and power and poetry in that.
Yeah, I think there is this grace and poetry that's just hiding in plain sight all around us, and we need to take the time to listen. And I think that, you know, that's what kind of gives us hope and reminds us, you know, the potential in all of us to walk a path of decency and civility and love.
Dave Isay is the founder and president of StoryCorps. I'm Michelle Johnson.
WFYI's Michelle Johnson with StoryCorps founder David Isay. Let us know if you use his suggestions by dropping us a line at aotm@wfyi.org or The Art of the Matter, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, 46202. Singer-songwriter Carrie Newcomer wants her latest album to give listeners the chance to experience and appreciate life for what is now, not what it was or will be. Like her previous records, this collection of songs resonates spiritually and poetically with all aspects of the Indiana Native's daily life. Jill Dittmeyer is here to tell us more about our WFYI November small studio session performer, Carrie Newcomer.
Sharon, her latest album is called The Beautiful Not Yet, and she says that title was actually inspired by a walk in the woods at the end of winter, the beginning of spring, a time that she says a lot of people think is just kind of gray and stark and ugly, but not to her. She says if you look closely, you see the buds on the trees and the plants readying to bloom, therefore, the beautiful not yet.
I'm creatively restless. I'm a creatively restless person, and songwriting's like breathing for me. You know, it's a daily practice.
Shovel is a prayer to the farmer's foot when he steps down and the soft earth gives way.
It's kind of a spiritual practice for me to be paying attention and writing.
Will you be my refuge, my haven in the storm? Will you keep the embers warm when my fire's all but gone? Will you remember and bring me sprigs of rosemary? Be my sanctuary till I can carry on. Carry
The Beautiful Not Yet. Yes, this is my newest album. I'm very excited about it. You know, I think it is the finest album I've come up with, which is what you want to say with each new album. Everyone to say, I pushed something here, and I feel like something expanded and grew. And I feel that way about this new one. And just this collection of elegant, elegant musicians.
Here we stand, breathless and pressed in hard times. Hearts hung like laundry on backyard clotheslines. Impossible just takes a little more time.
You know, what I mean is a really elegant musician knows that what you don't say is just as important as what you do say. That every person on this album is truly a virtuoso on their instrument. They have just great passion and dedication to their instrument. If you needed a lot of notes, they could play a lot of notes for you. And if that's what's needed, that's what they would do. But if all that was needed was three notes and a pause, that's all they would do. It's very egoless playing, and it's all about the song. It's about what makes the song most poignant and powerful. It's not even about me. It's about the song. And I really appreciated that about this group of musicians, their elegance.
I believe in a good long letter written on real paper and with real pen. I believe in the ones I love and know I'll never see again. I believe in the kindness of strangers.
This kind of combination of kind of classical virtuoso with roots sensibilities, it's interesting. And it was just such a fun, amazing album to record and to write for. We decided that it would be really great if before the recording, we would all get together. We recorded in Bloomington, Indiana, that we'd all get together a few days before. And, you know, we rehearsed and we sat on my front porch. I live out in the middle of the woods, so we walked in the woods and we talked about our lives and played with my dogs. And it had this really wonderful family kind of feel by the time we got in the studio. And I think that shows on the album, too. There's this kind of joy.
Live where you learn what we love most. Embrace it all, hold it close. Breathe it in, breathe it out, let it go. To live is to love so many things. To fly all beautiful wax wings. Breathe it in, breathe it out, let it go. Breathe in, breathe out, let it go.
Jill Dittmeyer with Carrie Newcomer. You can see and hear her perform songs from her new album and listen to her entire conversation with Jill at wfyi.org/small studio. And Jill, that just seems like an especially important conversation for now, for Thanksgiving week. Carrie is really, she's really tied into the spirituality of everything. I really loved the album she did inspired by Indian music a few years ago, Everything is Everywhere. And this feels like the same trajectory in a way.
She's literally been all over the world, and she brings her experiences from all of her visits to the people in every piece of music and poetry that she writes. She's also on tour right now. She's in Chicago tonight, November the 19th. She'll be back to Indiana in December. She's going to have a show at the Church Within on December the 2nd. And you can see her full concert schedule on her website. It's carrienewcomer.com.
Fantastic. You know what? Speaking of schedules and calendars, it's time for that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do?
In addition to booking yourself to go see Carrie, there are lots of other things going on right now, too.
Last-minute opportunity tonight, too, Sharon. November the 19th, the Onyx Fest wraps up at Indie Fringe. And also some things going on at Indie Fringe on Sunday the 20th, too. The Indie Fringe Prism Project, they're giving a free concert. The doors open at 1. It starts at 1:30. This is a new project that they're working on with Ball State University, helping some mentally and physically challenged young people to bring them into the world of theater. And it's a great project, and they're going to have their very first concert for everybody to come and see on the 20th.
Fun. You know what? This being Thanksgiving week, we're in full holiday performance swing, holiday event swing, and you'll hear much more about that in the coming weeks on The Art of the Matter. But Some things coming up in the not-too-distant future, the Indianapolis School of Ballet's production of The Nutcracker coming up December 16th through the 18th with 45 musicians from the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra and their relatively new conductor on staff, Vince Lee, who's very high energy, and I think he'll have a great time working with the dancers.
Live music, too.
Live music, yeah.
That is a big change.
Mm-hmm.
Right around the corner, too, once again, back at the Fringe on Saturday, December 3rd, it's the Uber View from the Heartland. This is a reprise from the Indie Fringe Festival. Local actor D. Paul Thomas, he spends a lot of time as an Uber driver, and he put together a one-man show about some of the interesting people that he has given rides around town. So this is a really, this would be a very fun, uplifting kind of festive show. December the 3rd at the Fringe.
I feel echoes of, what is it called, comedians in cars,
yes,
getting
cars
coffee,
getting
right?
Coffee.
Hey, speaking of twisted views of the world, Butler Theater is closing its fall season November 30th through December 4th in Lilly Studio Theater 168 with the absurdist one-act play called Chamber Music. It is a little crazy sounding. It's by Arthur Coppett, and it's the story of eight famous women from different historical periods who are all interned in the same insane asylum. They include Gertrude Stein, Joan of Arc, Susan B. Anthony, Queen Isabella I of Spain, Constanze Mozart, the wife of the composer, Amelia Earhart, silent film actress Pearl White, and explorer Osa Johnson. So, check
this
that
sounds
out.
Like somebody
Butler
drank
Theater.
A lot of eggnog and then wrote
it
this
kinda
together.
Does.
Huh?
I think I might have to go to that one. Yeah,
it could be kind of fun. Speaking of wild and crazy holiday parties, the Big Bad Voodoo Daddy is coming back to the Center for the Performing Arts on Saturday, November the 26th, 8 o'clock. I suggest getting your tickets now for that. That will probably sell out.
Absolutely. And don't forget, you can always learn more about local arts events at indiearts.org/guide, the Arts Council of Indianapolis's Indie Arts Guide, or join us next week for that wacky calendar we call
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and central Indiana. Your host is Sharon Gamble. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202, or you can email us at aotm@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. Early on, Eli Lilly was a soldier, a chemist, and a young entrepreneur making plans to conquer the relatively new field of pharmaceuticals. The Indiana Historical Society's new Indiana History Center You Are There exhibit is called Eli Lilly at the Beginning, and I invited Director of Exhibitions Research and Development Eloise Batic and exhibit researcher Angela Giacomelli to tell us the very human story of a man whose name became famous around the world for his company's devotion to treating disease and for philanthropy as well. So, Angela, I want to start with you because you did not grow up here, but you moved to Indianapolis, and do you remember when you first realized, no matter what you do in Indianapolis, you're kind of in the shadow of Eli Lilly and Company? Did you have a realization at some point?
I did, and it really didn't take too long. I mean, really, you go anywhere that is a sponsored event, a nonprofit, and you see their name splash, I believe. My biggest realization is that when I would go to the symphony, every time I would go, their name would be splashed above. And I started to understand their importance and just the way that they've been so philanthropic and thought that was neat. Still didn't know much about the company, but wanted to learn more. So I'm excited that I got that chance finally.
This was good timing, a good alignment of the stars.
Yes.
So tell us about... Eloise, just frame this for us. Remind us how the You Are There exhibits start.
Sure. So this is one of several exhibitions that have been a part of the You Are There series at the Indiana History Center. And our goal there is to provide visitors with the opportunity, that kind of magical opportunity that we all want to have, where we can step back into history and be present in the spaces and the moments that seem so magical to us, because they're really filled with the romance of history. So in all of the cases, we take a photograph, a historic photograph, or we were starting to branch out into documents and maps, other types of imagery for the source. But in this case, it is a photograph. So we'll take a photograph, we'll project it onto a fog screen, which is like kind of a shower curtain of fog, and the visitor steps through that in a very kind of dreamlike way.
It
is very magical. And then the doors open and that photograph comes to life in front of you and invites you to step inside and be a part of it in a fully sensory, immersive way.
So with Mr. Lilly, obviously someone who became so important in history in general, but in particular in Indiana and central Indiana, you must have had a lot of photographs to choose from. How did you narrow that down? Or was there one where your group of researchers and programmers said, that's it?
Sure. Yeah, this, as with all selection of You Are There photographs, it's very challenging because you're looking not only for a good story, but you're also looking for something that you can reasonably physically build. And so one of the challenges for us with some of the early photographs of Eli Lilly and Company, particularly as we were looking at a lab setting, were just really kind of overwhelming spaces with a lot of medical equipment, kind of scientific equipment that could have been very challenging, not only from a build and design standpoint, but also from the perspective of inviting school children in. And we want everything to be completely hands-on. And so when you've got open flames and, kind of the more scary, really interesting and fun elements of early science history, there just were some visitor experience concerns that we had.
Absolutely.
So we loved this photograph right from the get-go because it really does show that first business that really became Eli Lilly and Company. I mean, he had previous positions before, but this was the first of Eli Lilly and Company as we know it today. One of the things we were drawn to is the fact that it is the external view of the building. And so it allowed us to not only talk about Eli Lilly and Company, but to set it on the street and to talk about what Indianapolis was like in the 1870s.
So the year is 1876?
Well, our year is 1877. Okay. Eli Lilly and Company celebrates its anniversary 1876, but we are set 1 year later so that the company has had a little bit of time to be in business and to be in a position where they're growing and expanding and looking towards that next move.
Which also gives you the opportunity to find materials such as advertisements for things that they're selling.
Correct.
Where is it? Is it where the current campus is?
Actually, it is on or was on West Pearl Street. So I think people are going to be fascinated by the fact that a lot of the alleys in downtown Indianapolis are named. And this was basically a glorified alley that has been filled in with what was the Ayers Building, the flagship store downtown. So if you go to some of the restaurants along South Meridian near where the intersection of Meridian and Washington would be, that you should see a plaque in that general area where West Pearl Street would have been. So just a glorified alley.
Fantastic. And of course, at the era that you're setting this up, every entrepreneur dreams of being a company that changes the world. But Mr. Lilly and his son didn't know that that was going to happen yet.
Correct.
So what kinds of scenes and activities are we going to see when we go in, when we step through the magic fog?
Yeah, so the nice thing about this recreation is that we were able to get some inspiration from a recreation that they actually have at the Lilly campus. And one of the dominant activities in that space would have been pill rolling. And so
what is that?
Yes. Yeah, so I've learned all about it because not surprisingly, I didn't know a ton about making medicine just in my own life.
Sure.
So when visitors come in, we'll be having a few people
portraying employees who will be actually rolling out pills. So there were, at this point, all of the pill making is done by hand, and he would have been making elixirs and things of that nature. And we do reference that activity as well. But we have a version of like a pill material. So it ends up being clay. That's one of the trade sure. secrets. But it's mainly an activity done by the female employee that Lily had from the get-go. And so she is rolling these pills out into long strips and then cutting them up and then shaping them by hand. It is a long process. And I think people are going to get a sense of this wasn't done at the quick factory setting that we imagine. It was really a labor of love in a sense. And Lily was all about consistency. So each batch has to look just as person who will be taking the pills would imagine it. So people are going to get to witness that. I think the actors will have to navigate, you know, how much people get to actually roll out. But that's certainly available as an opportunity with visitors. So just getting a sense of the hands-on process that they were doing at this point.
And they get to test their own quality control abilities, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they talk about how if there was a bad pill, they would have to get rid of that batch, even if it was at a large cost to the company.
What it gives you a little insight as to why medicine is as expensive as it is.
Yes.
Or was even back then. What yes. surprised you most in your research about Mr. Lilly and the company?
Oh, goodness. Well, I think one thing that is fascinating about the person, Colonel Lilly, is just the way that his career had really flowed at that point. So lots of ups and downs, which is not necessarily unique to him. Entrepreneurs of the 1800s did experience a lot of up and downs as they do today. But just seeing a lot of the issues that he had with previous business partners, financial issues, but his desire to always keep moving forward and be looking towards the bigger and better, I just thought that was really interesting. And because I didn't know anything about him, I mean, all of this was a new discovery. And I'm hoping that when people come and visit, they get a sense of the fact that it did start with an actual human being. It's mm-hmm. not a fabricated character. He was a real fellow who had a lot of tragedies and triumphs and is very relatable. And I hope people enjoy that.
Eloise Baddock is Director of Exhibitions Research and Development, and Angela Giacomelli is an exhibit researcher at the Indiana Historical Society. See You Are There, Eli Lilly at the Beginning at the IHS's headquarters, the Indiana History Center. David Moose Adamson made his mark as a songwriter for the now disbanded Jukebox. He describes his newer work as a crust funk musical project, and a Cultural Manifesto's Kyle Long visited with David.
I'm Kyle Long of Cultural Manifesto. I'm joined in the studio by David Moose Adamson. Hey, David.
Hey. Hello.
Yeah, just a quick recap of your amazing career. You were a member of Archer Avenue with Richard Edwards of Margo and the Nuclear So-and-Sos. You led Jukebox for many years, one of the greatest Indiana bands of all time, opinion of a lot of folks.
Wow.
And you've more recently been doing electronic music under the name Sedkarn Archives. And you have a new album coming out November 11th titled Ubi Doob on Joyful Noise. And you have 5 songs unrelated
yes.
to these projects to share with us today, right?
Yes, correct.
What's your first song for us?
First song is by Traxman from Chicago. The song is Buddha Music. Of footwork music is so fruitful, but Traxman in particular seems like a really special selector of samples that kind of give you this feeling of like floating above the track, so this is one of those. Second song is The Burning Train by R.D. Burman.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah, I just love the blend of it. It sounds like an analog recording, but there's some really neat synthesizer and drum machine elements, and then also just this huge brass section. So I listen to this track a lot. The Burning Train. So my third song is Jenny Haval, Female Vampire. Track a lot. It's built on a really cool synthesizer loop, and the vocal is just beautiful. And I've been watching her live performances a lot, and they're super interesting and far out. Yes, so the fourth track I have is by Art of Noise. It's Moments in Love. And I remember hearing this as background music on TLC for like The Quiet Storm or something. That was when I first heard it. And then later, working at Luna, talking to Todd about this track, he was talking about his days in Dayton working at a record store, and that this track was one that just brought people into the store from all different walks of life. And I thought that was really neat and a good like tribute to what a cool track this is. Fifth and final song is by Joe Smooth. It's called Promised Land. I've just been listening to this track a lot. It's so positive and upbeat and happy, and it's just an awesome song.
Great.
Speaking with David Moose Adamson of Sedcarn Archives. He has a new record out now called Ooby Doob on Joyful Noise Recordings. And David, what's the best place for people to keep up with you online?
I'm on Facebook, SoundCloud, Bandcamp, Instagram, Twitter. Sedcarn Archives, it's SEDCAIRN Archives.
Awesome. Thank you for the great songs.
Thank you.
Kyle Long with David Moose Adamson. Hear Kyle's A Cultural Manifesto on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio Wednesday nights at 9 or Saturday nights at 10. Thanks for spending some time with The Art of the Matter on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. I'm Sharon Gamble. Today's contributors included Jill Dittmeyer and Michelle Johnson. You can hear our program twice each week on 90.1 FM, Saturday mornings at 7 and Thursday evenings at 8. And if you hear something you like and want to share, go to WFYI.org for our podcast. Tune in next week when we'll discover how Actors Theater of Indiana devised its holiday cabaret show, meet Indianapolis's new film commissioner, and discover Beef and Boards with kids. And of course, we'll have that arts calendar we call What'll We Do? All that and so much more on The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. The Art of the Matter is executive producer Roxana Caldwell, producer Melissa Davis, contributor Jill Dittmeyer, and host Sharon Gamble. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.